There has been more looting and burning near Minneapolis, Minnesota, after a black man was killed by a police officer who mistakenly shot him, thinking it was a taser she was using. That brought protesters into the streets and led to the looting and burning that we see far too often. The death of any human being is a tragedy, but it seems that only the death of a black human being leads to rioting, looting, and burning. The proof is in the killing of not one, but five white people at the hands of a black man in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Philip Adams, a former pro football player, shot and killed a doctor, his wife, and two grandchildren, aged 9 and 5. He also killed another man who was working at the doctor's house before killing himself. The deaths of those five white people did not lead to rioting, looting, and burning in Rock Hill. Each incident of the killing of a black person brings the same results. Radicals who lie in wait for such an incident so they can stock up on stolen booze, big screen TVs, and whatever else they can steal. Many of these people are filmed during the rampage, and yet few, if any, are ever arrested and punished. And that sends a message to others that it is okay to riot, loot, and burn, and only idiots miss out on all that free stuff. We should be all able to agree that the loss of a human life should be avoided at all costs. But many of these incidents come about because the victim would not obey lawful commands. They encounter police in almost all of these incidents because they have been unlawful. Their crime may have been small or large, but the way to avoid a clash with a police officer is to do exactly as you are asked. There will be time to argue after the incident is over, not while it is unfolding and emotions are raw. In many of these cities where these incidents are occurring, we find black officials in charge, mayors and police chiefs and prosecutors. When the people in charge are black, why assume that justice will not be done and take to the streets? All of the media attention is centered on the lone death of a black person in Minnesota. The death of five white people in Rock Hill was briefly reported and forgotten. We now hear calls from crackpots in Congress to do away with the police completely. At the same time, progressives want to keep guns out of the hands of the citizens. They can only enforce that against lawful gun owners, because the unlawful will still keep their guns. Anybody else see a problem with that? I share credit with Chad Uretsky of Great American Politics, Amy Swearer of National Interest, and Tom Knighton of Bearing Arms for their research and contributions, which I incorporate with my own today. This commentary should be shared with children and grandchildren, because they will not hear this from their classrooms or from the dishonest media. What protection do you have against criminals who mean you harm? Amendment 2 of the Constitution reads, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." Such a short statement, yet arguably the most controversial amendment in the Bill of Rights. As simple and straightforward as this statement appears, many have misinterpreted this important restriction on the government. This amendment, as all other amendments in the Bill of Rights, restricts the United States government and state and local governments from violating the rights of the people. Unfortunately, as often is the case with all rights and liberties, abuses of these rights lead some people to believe these rights should be restricted. Killings committed with firearms bring cries for common sense gun laws. Questions and statements often heard in response to the latest tragedy are similar to the following. Why does someone need to own an assault rifle? No one should be able to have a weapon made for the military. Or if you need 30 rounds for hunting, you're not a very good hunter. Followed by, we should eliminate semi-automatic weapons, and no one needs an AR-15 for self-defense. And the list goes on. On the surface, all of these questions sound somewhat reasonable, especially in the wake of a mass shooting or school massacre. That being the case, why would so many be against such common sense gun control? Why is the Second Amendment so controversial? At the core of this issue is the unfortunate fact that the vast majority of Americans have little or no knowledge of or understanding of the history of this country and its founding principles and documents. With that, any attempt to address such questions must begin with unpacking the purpose behind the Second Amendment and its wording. Something people would do well to remember is that the Constitution was written while the Revolutionary War and its ravages were still fresh in the minds of people newly freed from British rule. Along with a smaller contingent of trained men, a ramshackle group of armed citizens defeated a formidable foreign military force. This outfit of armed citizens was the militia, and it is with this in mind that the founders began to pen the Second Amendment. Therefore, the amendment begins with the phrase, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Why would a militia be needed to protect a free state? Most people today do not realize that the Constitution doesn't actually provide for a standing army. To the contrary, the Constitution provided for each state to maintain a militia, with military officers appointed by those states. Congress could raise an army from these militia, but with funding for no more than 2 years. For a large portion of America's history, it was precisely these militia that formed the core of our country's armed forces. These militia would be called up and directed by the federal government as need arose, though the militia under each state was to be maintained by the states themselves, under officers appointed by the states. There was a reason for structuring America's defense forces in such a manner. The Founding Fathers saw a particular threat in maintaining a standing military. The Founding Fathers actually feared a standing army. Maintaining such a force would require a great financial burden, and if maintained, such a force could be used against the people themselves, as the British had already done. This belief was so strong that Alexander Hamilton suggested that if a standing army be formed, the citizenry should be little, if at all, inferior to them in discipline and the use of arms. This could only hold true if that citizenry were to have arms that were not inferior to those possessed by such an army. The founders understood that the only way the government could exert tyrannical rule over its constituents was to disarm them. They also understood that the way to prevent execution of such tyrannical power, the people needed to be able to keep and bear arms of a nature that would allow them to defend themselves against enemies, both foreign and domestic. Despite concerns about having a federal military, it wasn't long before the founders recognized some limitations in the idea of state-trained militias. After multiple reminders by George Washington, Congress, prior to the end of their first session in 1789, granted the president's request for a standing army. That said, it still was not until much later that the standing army, as we know it now, was instituted in the United States. With the founding of that standing army, the need for the Second Amendment is further solidified, and it can easily be argued that it was precisely so that citizens could have military-grade weapons that the founders enshrined in this amendment the protection of the God-given right to keep and bear arms. They saw rights as God-given, not government-granted. The fact is, our founding fathers saw defense of the country and defense of self as the responsibility of each citizen, and such defense would require ownership of military-style weapons. It is with this in mind that they were able to say, "We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor," when they signed the Declaration of Independence. As to make the point for our founders, governments since have committed numerous atrocities against innumerable millions of people. We are fortunate that this has not yet happened in the United States, but the danger is always there. I remind you again of the words of a Japanese admiral who stated that the only reason the Japanese army did not invade America in World War II was because they would have encountered an armed citizen behind every blade of grass. As for the questions and statements about limiting gun ownership, the Founding Fathers not only saw no need to restrict the ownership of arms, not limited to guns, but they desired to see our people armed in such a way that they could defend against an army, whether sent by a foreign government or engaged against the American people by a government gone rogue. So what about the other questions? Why does anyone need a so-called assault rifle? What about the AR-15 and semi-automatic weapons? First of all, there is no such thing as an assault rifle. When asked, most people cannot even provide a definition of an assault rifle. The answers they give are generally related to the appearance of a weapon, if anything, and might include the word scary. Even when politicians speak of guns of any sort, their orations expose their utter ignorance in regard to such matters. The phrase assault weapon actually came into common use in America in the late 1980s, but the idea originated decades earlier. Any weapon can be used for assault, just like any weapon can be used for defense. To name it an assault weapon is to imply its sole purpose is offensively inflicting harm. Such a redefinition was used to foment support for the assault weapons ban passed through Congress in 1990. Many now argue that an assault rifle is defined as a rifle that can fire many shots with one pull of the trigger. However, the concept is still vague and wholly inaccurate. AR-15 does not stand for assault rifle. It is an Armalite rifle named for the company Armalite from which that model rifle originated. So why does the government always want to go after these particular weapons? We should never cede to the government, to any extent, our right to keep and bear arms. This only leads to the tyranny from which the Founding Fathers were protecting Americans by enshrining this God-given right in the Second Amendment. It's not about hunting. It's about being able to stand up to a tyrannical government with weapons equivalent to those issued by that government in order to preserve the liberty we fought so hard to secure. In announcing the launch of Sportsman and sportswomen for Biden. The former vice president's campaign demonstrated how many gun control advocates misconstrue the purpose of the Second Amendment. That coalition of 50 prominent hunters and anglers stated Joe Biden would protect the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding Americans to purchase and responsibly use the firearms for hunting and sporting. Unfortunately, the gun control advocates forget the Second Amendment is not and never has been concerned with the protection of hunting and sport shooting. It is considered with the protection of something much more fundamental to American democracy, maintaining the security of a free state. An armed citizenry is the best and most natural defense against threats to individual rights, whether those threats stem from a tyrannical government, a foreign army, a mob, or an individual criminal. And although the threat from a tyrannical government or foreign army may appear remote or far-fetched, the threats from mobs and individual criminals are very common. The purpose of most gun laws, at least as expressed by those who support them, is to keep guns out of criminal hands and to keep people safe. Few gun control advocates will admit that they want to disarm everyone. Yet, despite the many laws on the books, criminals keep getting guns, and they always will. Gun laws don't actually stop them. Here's just one example of just how they bypass the laws. Nashville Metro Police officers assigned a juvenile crime task force unit to the Knoll Crest apartments and noticed a group of people standing around a silver Buick. When police approached the group, the suspect, identified as Deshaun Williams, fled to a nearby apartment. After obtaining permission to search the apartment, officers found a .357 Magnum revolver in a bedroom closet. A check of this weapon revealed it to have been reported stolen out of the Hendersonville Police Department and then to a vehicle that Williams had been standing by. They noticed another one, a black 9mm handgun in plain view, which was reported stolen from Davidson County. Williams denied being in possession of these weapons, but was found to be in constructive possession of them due to close proximity. In short, this convicted felon was in possession of two stolen guns. Aren't gun laws supposed to stop this from happening? Isn't the purpose of those laws to keep guns out of the wrong hands? The fact is, gun laws keep guns out of the hands of legally responsible people. What that means is that a convicted felon can't just walk into a gun store and purchase a firearm legally and then commit crimes again. So instead, they steal guns from people who are not prohibited. They buy guns from other criminals who have stolen them. They obtain them outside of the law in any way they can. Meanwhile, gun control activists look at the unlawful acts committed with these unlawfully obtained guns and think we need more laws. They don't understand that the laws are already on the books, but they're not working because they're not being enforced. What Williams was alleged to have done, being in possession of two firearms despite his status as a felon, should tell you all you need to know about the effectiveness of so-called gun control. The fact that he ran from the cops immediately indicates that we're not talking about a master criminal here, someone too smart to be stopped by mere laws. No, we're talking about a street-level guy who can't figure out to not grab the attention of police. If someone that dumb can get guns, then maybe it's time to start acknowledging that the gun laws are not working. And if you're serious about curbing violence, try something else. I grew up using a 12-gauge shotgun from my grandfather. At age 10, I was taught how to use that gun safely. For more than 68 years, I have been around guns, handguns, rifles, shotguns, and AR-15s. Kids today don't have any idea of the times I grew up in. There were 6 children in our home, plus my mother and father and an uncle. Money in short supply. And I hunted squirrels and rabbits that became badly needed food on our table. Our home always had a gun handy in case of a break-in. That did not happen with the frequency of today. All of the families near us were armed. We understood that the police cannot be everywhere at once. There was no 911 emergency line, and even if there had been, the police response would have taken anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. Someone kicking in your door can kill you, rob the premises, and be miles away before the police arrive. Yet in all of those decades, I have never shot anyone, even though a few people may have deserved it. Would I shoot an intruder threatening me or my family? Absolutely yes, without hesitation. I'd hate to do it, but if somebody has to be shot, I prefer it be the intruder. Criminals will always get guns, regardless of how many new laws progressives put on the books. To protect ourselves and family, we cannot afford to sit around the fireplace singing Kumbaya and hoping our house is not the next one to be hit. My instinct for protection extends beyond my own life and family. I keep and bear arms for the protection of friends and neighbors, anyone who needs protection, regardless of race, creed, or color. Almost every study has found that Americans use their firearms in self-defense between 500,000 and 3 million times a year. The Daily Signal each month publishes an article highlighting the month's many news stories on defensive gun use. I'll share some examples with you today. Klamath Falls, Oregon. A legally armed citizen saw a man fire a gun several times at a woman in a convenience store parking lot and drew his own gun and shot the assailant twice before calling 911, saving the woman's life. In Jonesville, Virginia, a legally armed man shot and wounded an axe-wielding father who was drunk and who had previous arrests. In Youngstown, Ohio, a woman used her AR-15 to defend herself against her armed ex-boyfriend. After he shot at her, the legally armed woman returned fire and police arrested the wounded man. The woman and her children escaped further harm. Columbia, South Carolina. 2 would-be robbers walked into a Waffle House late at night, pointed guns at employees, and demanded money. A legally armed diner quickly sent them fleeing by drawing his own gun and exchanging fire. In Salt Lake City, Utah, a nightclub employee acted quickly to protect patrons when a man entered the club firing his weapon. The employee grabbed his own weapon and fatally shot the armed man before he could injure anybody else. In the Bronx, New York, a retired New York police officer shot a man who tried to mug her. The woman shot the mugger with her licensed revolver after he pushed her against the wall and threatened her. In Warren, Michigan, a man with a concealed carry permit defended himself during an incident of road rage, drawing his gun and returning fire with the driver who was shooting at him. And in Palo, Iowa, a homeowner shot and killed an intruder who was breaking into his house. The intruder broke a window of a child's bedroom, entered, and threatened residents before the homeowner used his legally acquired gun to stop him. These incidents happen all the time in America. Again, the Constitution does not protect the right to keep and bear arms so that Americans can hunt or engage in sport shooting. It protects the right to keep and bear arms so that Americans like the ones I just described can ensure the security of a free state and defend their inalienable rights when the government cannot or will not do so on their behalf. Of course, new gun owners should understand that their right comes with the corresponding duties to act responsibly. They should take care to get proper training. learn their state's gun laws, and investing in safe storage for their firearms to keep them safe. But at the end of the day, the primary purpose of the Second Amendment is not so that you can secure your dinner. It is to secure your inalienable rights. This is a hot topic. It's not going to go away. The Biden administration, the squad in Congress, and many others are calling for police to be completely abolished, jails and prisons closed, those in those jails and prisons released, and you're going to be left at home without a weapon to protect yourself? Not me. I will stand for the right to keep and bear arms. I understand that there are all kinds of problems involved in this subject. But the bottom line is that the only real protection we have is what the founding fathers imagined in the beginning, personal responsibility. Today, we can pick up the telephone, call 911, and tell the person on the other end that our home is being invaded. That person then alerts the police. The police want to help. So as quickly as they can, they come toward your house. It might take 5 minutes if you're lucky. It might take 20 or 30 minutes if you live in a rural area. Do you know how long it takes to kick in a door and with a gun take lives and rob the owner? Within 5 minutes. So we have to take care of ourselves. And that's why we should be so observant of what's happening in our country today, as too many are seeking to take guns away from lawful people. Take them from the unlawful. Use the laws on the books. Thank you for listening. I'll be back again next week, God willing. Same time, same station. And God bless America.